You're listening to the Weekend Morning Show at 13 minutes after 8 o'clock. And coming up next, the history of abandoned Manitoba.
Puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, welcome back to the new history series that we call Abandoned Manitoba. Our guide for the series is Gordon Goldsborough, the chair of the Historic Preservation Committee of the Manitoba Historical Society. Now, last week, Gordon told us about the growth, decline, and closure of the Union Stockyards in St. Boniface. And we got a number of listener responses to that piece. Gordon is here. Hello there.
Good morning, Terry.
I'd like to start with some listener response. Interesting letter I got via email from Professor Barry Prentice of the IH Asper School of Business. He works in the Department of Supply Chain Management, and he wrote, "I enjoyed listening to the piece on the Union Stockyards. That's a topic that held my interest for a long time because it has so many lessons on industrial location, transportation technology, and strategic transshipment location. To our good fortune, we have a complete record of the rise and fall of this important part of our history documented at the archives and special collections at the U of M." So I wrote back to Professor Prentice and I said, "Is it fair to say that the success of the stockyards was due very much to efficient and imaginative supply chain management in the early part of the 20th century?" And he replied, "The Union Stockyards was a bold public initiative, much like the Shoal Lake Aqueduct and the Pointe du Bois Generating Station. Opportunities were recognized and seized by far-sighted politicians prior to World War I who had the confidence that no projects were too big for Winnipeg. The cattle supply chain existed, but the Rodman Roblin government, who was Duff Roblin's grandfather, took the bull by the horns, as it were, and made Winnipeg into Canada's largest meatpacking center." Pretty interesting.
Fascinating stuff.
We also got this voicemail.
Good morning, Terry. My name's David Halstead. I just have a couple of little stories to share with you about the Union Stockyards. I grew up on a small farm near Clear Lake, Manitoba, and when I was about 9 years old in 1949, a busload of us came into Winnipeg to tour a number of places, and we toured Canada Packers. And some of the memories I have were centered around the killing floors. One was the killing floor where the men used big hammers to stun the cattle, and then they were started moving through the process. The second one was the killing floor for the hogs, and the sound has just stayed with me, the massive high-pitched squealing. That process is quite altered now. I watched sausage being made, and I can tell you that I didn't eat sausage for some weeks after that. And at the end of the sausage-making line, there was a lady standing there folding cardboard sheets to make the little boxes that the sausages were placed in, and her hands were just going like crazy to make these little boxes. And that was her job. And so one of the things that I do remember is the workplace and the repetitive nature of many of the jobs. And then in about 3 or 4 years later, I was a 4-H calf club member, and so we watched the process of the selling of the calves, and I got to tour part of the stockyards, and was incredibly impressed with the organization, the structure of the pens, very thick wood, and the hardware, the hinges and so on were massive and well designed. So there are some memories of the stockyards and the Canada Packers plant from someone who didn't work there, but did have on two occasions the opportunity to visit the site. Take care. Love your show. Bye now.
So that's David Halstead. David, thanks so much for that. That was a much longer voicemail than we were able to play for all of you here. But Gordon, it's interesting the range of comments that that particular story elicited.
Indeed, people often had very profound memories of the old stockyards.
And that stockyard's long gone, so you weren't inside them, whereas David Halstead had actually been there and seen it, right?
Right. The only thing I remember as a kid going by in the car is the distinct stench emanated from the place.
Now, Speaking of air and smells, last week you promised us a breath of fresh air. What's your story this week?
Indeed, we're going to the Lakeside Fresh Air Camp on Lake Winnipeg near Gimli.
Okay, and what's the Lakeside Fresh Air Camp?
Well, it arose out of a movement that started in England and the United States to take poor urban children, people who couldn't get out of the city, for at least a couple of weeks and send them off to some place where they could enjoy the fresh air. And initially, these camps began here in Winnipeg, actually just in the Norwood Flats area. But ultimately, they moved them out to the vicinity of Gimli. And by the time they were at their height in the 1920s and 30s, there were something like a half a dozen of these fresh air camps where they would parcel up the kids here in Winnipeg, put them on the train, and send them out to these camps for a couple of weeks.
So where, relative to Gimli exactly, was the camp that you're talking about?
The one that I'm talking about specifically, the Lakeside Fresh Air Camp, was located about 4 miles north of Gimli, just on the edge of what we call now Camp Morton.
Camp Morton,
in fact, was one of these fresh air camps as well. It was one run by the Catholic Church.
Oh, so that's where the name came from.
Indeed. It was named for Father Morton.
So what actually went on at the camps?
Well, the kids would arrive on the train, as I said, and they would get off. They would be walk over to the camp itself. It was apparently a little bit of a walk from the railway stop, and they would have bunks in buildings. They weren't dramatic buildings. They were probably mostly just wood shacks, I guess, and they would get settled in, and they'd have a variety of activities for them. They swam in the lake, of course. They played games. I mean, it was sort of seen as a way for these kids to just enjoy life in a way they couldn't in the city.
And so what do you know about exactly what they built there? You said they built kind of cabins or shacks for the kids to sleep in.
Well, unfortunately, the records from the early days when it was first founded are very poor. All we really have are records from the 1960s and 70s. And by then, it was already fairly well established. By then, there was about a dozen buildings. There was a cookhouse, dining hall. There were various recreation buildings and dormitories. I would imagine, though, in the very beginning, when it was first founded in 1921, it was probably much less developed, probably only just a few buildings.
What happened to them?
Well, they're all gone.
Yeah, but why?
Well, I guess it was the changing attitudes about, you know, children. I think by that time there were social agencies that were involved. But this was going back into the 1920s when there weren't such social agencies. There weren't any means. So a lot of the churches felt that it was their obligation to step in and do a lot of this to give these kids an opportunity.
Now, if you go to the site where the Lakeside Camp stood, what's there?
Not a lot today. All you can really find are just the remains of the concrete foundations of the buildings. The buildings themselves were knocked down in the late 1970s when the camp finally closed. It closed in 1977. There is, however, one vestige of the camp that still stands if you're interested in seeing it. If you just go next door to Camp Morton, there is a war memorial, which, curiously enough, was actually at the Lakeside site for most of its existence. It was a monument put up by the Union Bank of Canada to commemorate its employees who had been killed during the First World War. Because keep in mind, of course, when this camp was established in 1921, it was just after the war had ended, and everyone across society had people that they were mourning. The bank put up this monument. Bank was, by the way, it was one of the groups that had endowed the camp, had provided the funds to establish the camp. And so they felt that this monument would be an appropriate way to commemorate some of their employees who had been killed in the war. And it stood there at the camp right up until the end, I'm told. But then when the camp was being demolished, they didn't want to demolish this monument, so they just moved it next door to Camp Morton. So if you go to the Camp Morton site, you can still see that war memorial, but it just wasn't there. It was always at the Lakeside site.
I'm curious as to whether anyone listening is someone who might have gone to one of these camps over the years when they did exist.
Oh, I have to imagine there must be. The statistics aren't great, but I know that they would have anywhere from 1,000 to several thousand children each summer. So if you figure if the camp operated for over 50 years, at that rate, there must be hundreds of thousands of kids that went through that facility, and many of whom, of course, now would be quite elderly. I'd like to think that probably this experience probably was a pretty important one in their lives.
And you've got extensive material on the Manitoba Historical Society. Society website about this with photos and such of, in fact, of the remains of the foundations.
Indeed, and we have pictures showing the blankets they would lay out after the camp was wrapped up. They'd lay the blankets out on the ground just to air them out, ready for the next campers to come in. I have pictures of, you know, the kids hanging out the railway windows of the box of railway cars. Of course, they were taking the railway out to the camp. Photos of the kids lining up to go out for a dip in the lake. Really an interesting slice of life.
Gordon, thanks so much for this.
You're welcome.
All righty. Talk to you soon. Gordon Goldsboro, don't you love him? Wow. Chair of the Historic Preservation Committee of the Manitoba Historical Society, talking about fresh air camps. You can find a lot more about them on the website of the Manitoba Historical Society, and you can find a link to that on our Facebook page. And next week, Gordon will be back with memories of a very different busy camp, a very different kind of camp near Dauphin, Manitoba.
Puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
So if you or a relative went to the fresh air camps, call us on the listener line. Tell us what it was like, 788-3102, or email weekend@cbc.ca.